I've not talked to a whole lot of people that have met Groucho Marx. Ronnie Schell is one. You know him from, oh gosh, so many television shows, most prominently Gomer Pyle, but many, many others, including Good Morning World, which I will ask you about. Ronnie Schell, thank you for joining us on WGN.
How you doing, Steve? Pleasure to be on here.
I'm doing great, and I am just thrilled to talk with you. I almost don't know where to begin, I think, with what we just heard. Groucho Marx!
Well, we can start with that Groucho Marx interview. That was September 1959.
So
I was still working a local club in San Francisco.
Well, you were working, quote, the beatnik beat. They were called beatniks at the time. I don't know what we would...
Exactly.
Yeah.
That was the beatnik era.
Yeah. So explain how you got on You Bet Your Life, what Groucho was like, and what you were talking about. What are the heck are beatniks?
Well, to start off, I was working at the Purple Onion, a very famous nightclub in those days in San Francisco in North Beach. And on the bill was the Kingston Trio and Phyllis Diller. And so the producer of this particular show, You Bet Your Life, asked George Fenneman. You remember George Fenneman? He was the announcer.
Yes, I do.
Voucher.
Yep.
And he said, go up and see if you can get Phyllis to do our show. And he said, okay, I'll give it a try. So that was a week off, so he came up to San Francisco. And George was a San Franciscan. He graduated from the same college that I did. So I had a little in there. And so he saw her and immediately signed her up for the next, whenever, I can't remember what day it was on, but anyway. And he came to me and he said, by the way, you're very funny. Would you like to be on the show too? And I said, I sure would. So he signed me up, and I was on there three weeks later. And I got to say, I'd heard a lot about Groucho being grouchy. He treated me like a king. It was a great association. I got to know him later when he was in the audience when I did one of my guest shots on The Tonight Show, and he was very, very friendly. And so that's my history.
Well, I want to know more about that, and I'll get back to the beatniks in a moment. But you said Groucho was, in fact, very friendly. What was he like? I'm told that he had among the... And by the way, friends, if you don't know it, within the showbiz circles, Ronnie Schell, who I'm talking to right now, is considered a comedian's comedian, you know, and old school with the cigar and all that kind of thing. So you're someone that comedians of a certain age would look to. In fact, Richard Dreyfuss, I believe, used you to help him.
Yes, he did.
Yeah, for the movie The Last Laugh.
Uh-huh. Well, I ended up, before I semi-retired 3 years ago, I ended up working in Las Vegas for 50 years, 5-0. And I would usually open for a big singer, like, you know, Tony Bennett or Glenn Campbell or somebody like that. And so it was very lucrative because, you know, they always wanted a comic with the singer. And then toward the last, I guess about the last 5 or 6 years, they started, well, I think it was Diana Ross who started it. She said, I don't need a comedian. I want to be by myself. And that sort of ended comedians opening for big stars. But I had a good 50 years working with these guys and girls, and it was an education and a moneymaker.
Well, darn that Diana Ross. So I want to get back to a couple of things I brought up. First of all, you were the comedy
advisor. You don't want to talk about Diana Ross, huh? Cause
no, I don't want to talk.
She's one of the two people I worked with that I didn't like.
That's okay. We don't need to talk about Diana Ross.
We won't go into it.
No, but I do want to talk to you about being the comedy advisor for Richard Dreyfuss for the film The Last Laugh. Why did he choose you, and what is comedy advice? What does that mean?
You tell me. I was asked during the filming, whenever he was on stage, reliving some of his He was supposed to be a comedian who'd retired about 25 years ago, and he makes a comeback. And that's the last laugh. And his manager was played by Chevy Chase. Yeah, he played his manager.
Mm-hmm.
And so I got to know them both pretty well. Well, I had met Dreyfus before, but so anytime he'd say, would I do this? And I'd usually say, yeah, you do that. Because I had the experience of working for all those years, and that's how it came about. It was, fortunately or unfortunately, it was not based on beatniks. Beatniks was a term that they used when I was starting out, and beatniks were, you know, I don't know what you'd call them today. They were like people on the outside looking down. It was one of my descriptions, but they were, you know, very inside, not showbiz type people.
Were they later people that became hippies, or is that something else altogether different?
Very good, very good. That was the introduction to hippies. Hippies came after the beatniks, and some of the beatniks went on to be hippies. Some of them went on to be famous, very few, but some of them did come on to be comedians and singers. And so it was a good experience. Beatniks were not troublemakers, you know what I mean? They weren't, and they weren't lazy. They just didn't care for society.
Well, that's a problem. If you want to get ahead in life.
Yeah, but it was. They didn't think it was, but they flourished.
I'm sure, and they probably smoked interesting cigarettes, too.
Oh, yes. I forgot to even mention that. They smoked the funny little cigarettes.
Which is so ironic that
cigarettes in those days.
Yeah, well, the thing is that's so ironic that at the time they had to hide the fact that they were smoking marijuana, but now it's legal just about everywhere. You know, it's not a problem.
And people smoke cigarettes in front of you, and they're usually higher than a kite. Some of them.
Yeah.
But as long as it doesn't hurt anybody, I don't see anything wrong. I never used it, but I never saw anything. I never saw any guy smoke a joint and then kill somebody.
But I want to circle back to Groucho Marx. And listeners, by the way, you're yelling at me and I'm paying attention. Why isn't he asking Ronnie about Gomer Pyle and about Jim Nabors? So I'll get to that in a minute. But let me, and I want to ask you about Good Morning World, too. I mean, clearly sure. You could take my job because you were a disc jockey. But I want to ask you.
Well, you know.
Yes?
Speaking of Chicago, which is one of my favorite cities, I was in Chicago prior to doing Gomer Pyle or any of these, Good Morning World, any of these shows. I opened for two very significant acts at the world-famous Palmer House. Are they still having acts there?
They don't have acts there, and I'm not even sure. The Palmer House.
There was dancing, Ben Arden's orchestra, and I worked with Lorna Luft.
Ah, yeah.
The other daughter of Judy Garland.
Right.
I worked with a month there. That was my second engagement there. But there was another engagement I had with, big, heavy trumpet player from New Orleans.
Fountain? Fountain?
Who?
Fountain? Is that his name?
No.
Well, listeners will tell us. But let me go back and ask you about Groucho, and then we're going to take a pause, and then we'll be back.
Sure.
But Groucho Marx, was he funny? I mean, hysterically funny? Quick? Was he really that quick?
Yes. When I knew him, he was still fast with the one-liners, and he didn't try to impress anybody. If he thought something was funny, he'd just say it. And he did a lot of humor, and he talked a lot about his brothers. He was the youngest, you know, of the Marx brothers. And I sometimes wondered if he missed any of that. I never found out for sure because I never asked him. But I later saw him in the audience at the Tonight Show when I was doing it, one of my guest shots on it. And he came back and gave me great compliments and was very, very supportive. So I have nothing bad to say about him. He finally smoked smoked. He finally had a real mustache.
Yes, I remember that. Is Al Hurt Al Hurt the trumpet player you're thinking of?
Who?
Al Hurt.
That's right, Al Hurt. Thank whoever said that.
Well, we could thank listeners who contacted us.
He was delightful.
Mm-hmm.
And I worked with him for a month. And I was going down to New Orleans to work with him, and I don't know, something happened. I never did, but it was a great thing. I worked with most of the singers that you know today. The only ones I didn't work with were Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin. I think everybody else, but I didn't want to work with Sinatra because he had a fairly bad reputation.
So I've heard,
singer,
but you know what? I'm going to get a bad reputation if I don't break for commercials here. So let me do that.
Break for commercial.
Thank you. And then we will talk, I promise, about Gomer Pyle and Good Morning World and much more with Ronnie Schell on WGN. Ronnie Schell. And, you know, people most of all want to know, Ronnie, about Gomer Pyle. Frank Sutton, of course, with Sergeant Carter. What was that experience like?
It lasted actually 7 years. We did 5 years of the Gomer Pyle show, and at the end of the fourth year, Jim Neighbors decided he didn't want to do Gomer anymore. He wanted to sing. So CBS, which sponsored our show, asked him to do, how about a variety show? And he said, great, I'll bring Ronnie with me and Frank Sutton. And he did. And for 2 years, we did the Jim Neighbors Hour, which was always number one in the variety section of shows.
Uh-huh.
And that was another great experience because I got to play a lot of different characters other than, you know, my part of Duke on the Gomer Pyle show. And then we came across, but you're always going to have problems in show business. I always tell that anybody. It's going to, will I make it? Do I have a chance? I said, well, it's up to fate. We were riding high with the Jim Neighbors show in 1969 and 70. We were number one. We even beat Carol Burnett. And the new vice president came in, Freddie Silverman. And he decided that all our shows, Andy Griffith, Mayberry RFD, Petticoat Junction, and a couple of other ones, and Jim Neighbors Hour were hits. And he canceled us. And we were number one in the ratings. Not number one, but, you know, the top variety show. And so that was a classic blow. So we had to just leave and do our own thing from then on out.
Well, and you sure have. A Good Morning World, you played me. You played a disc jockey. I'm not really a disc jockey. I have been in my life. Your co-star.
I played Larry Clark.
I'm sorry?
A radio personality. And I co-starred with a guy named Joby Baker,
uh-huh,
who was an artist, also a painter. And in fact, he did my bathroom a couple of times. Ah, just kidding. I can throw little humor in every once in a while.
That's good.
We both played disc jockeys, and if you watch the show in the reruns, we didn't know what we were doing. We did our own putting the needle in the records and everything like that, which was really wrong. By that time, they had engineers to do that, but nonetheless, we were pretty lucky the first year. We were on a year and a half on CBS. The problem was And there's always problems in everybody's career. My problem with doing Good Morning World was that we were opposite, we were CBS, and we were opposite Tuesday Night at the Movies when NBC had just started first run motion pictures on Tuesday night. So that's what we were opposite. So I visioned every Tuesday night people in America look at their TV log and said, well, who should we watch tonight, Ronnie Schell or Cary Grant? So we lost out. We were about 40th in the whole bunch of shows.
Right. Goldie Hawn was actually the co-star of that. Did you have any inkling that she would become the star she is?
Let me tell you a true story about Goldie. She was a go-go dancer out of Baltimore, Maryland, and she got hired to do an Andy Griffith special as a chorus in the chorus line. And somebody said, hey, you know, she's got a really good personality. Why don't we make her Ronnie Schell's girlfriend? And so they hired her to do the first 15 or 20 shows. And right from the start, Goldie was independent and thought that she shouldn't rehearse too much because she'd get stale. So about the third week of rehearsal, we used to rehearse in my apartment. I wasn't married then. You do the math, okay? Anyway, I said...
What are you saying? Okay.
Oh, I'm just joshing. I'm just shy. I got to throw in a little humor every once in a while.
Indeed.
I don't mind, do you, Steve?
Not at all.
Because I don't want what's his name coming and beat me up.
I don't know who that... Oh, Sergeant Carter?
Huh? No. The guy she's been with for 35, 40 years.
Kurt Russell.
Great guy. And the first motion picture I ever did, he was the... it was his starring role. It was called The Strongest Man in the World. It was a Disney movie, and I played the referee. Had a great part.
I'm told that you still do a Sergeant Carter imitation.
Well, not very well. I'm not a real impressionist, but I wanted to get this other thing across that I said to Goldie after about 3 weeks of rehearsals. And I said, Goldie, what's this you tell me about you're going to get stale? She said, it is true. I get stale after about that. I said, Goldie, listen to me. I've been in the business 4 years. You're not going to make it. I'm going to tell you this right now. I told her, I was being honest with you. You're not going to make it because you don't like to rehearse. Next year, she won the Academy Award for Cactus Flower, and I found out while working some toilet in Omaha, Nebraska. Now, that's a true story.
I love
that. She never let me forget it.
I love that story. Frank, you're on WGN. Frank, you are talking to Ronnie Schell. We have less than 2 minutes.
Hello. My question is, how different was working the character of Lester Starr going down to Georgia compared to Hollywood working on Gomer Pyle? And by the way, I'm like, just throwing this in, I'm 20 miles away from where the Glenn Campbell grew up.
In
Billstown.
Arkansas, right?
Correct. Bill from Prescott, but he was buried in Billstown.
I loved him. What was the question? What was the other character?
You played a character called Lester Starr on Dukes of Hazzard. And my question is, how different was working the Dukes of Hazzard set? I presume you worked in Georgia. Compared to working in Hollywood, say Gomer Pyle.
It was easy because, you know, as a nightclub comedian, I was all over the world working through intervening years. So it was nothing for me to be on the road for 8 to 9 weeks. We did Dukes of Hazzard. I think it was the second episode of Dukes of Hazzard, and the guy who played Colonel or something like that, little short guy, I can't remember his name, but we became fast friends. And so I had a good 10 or 12 days there working with these two guys. And of course, Wolpat and what was the other guy's name?
Oh, gosh, the Dukes of Hazzard.
Schneider.
Yeah, thank you. Yes. Yep.
Yeah, I remain pretty good friends with Schneider. Every time I see him now, we're you know, we say hello and all that kind of stuff.
Can you still do, Ronnie?
Wolfpack, I never got that off.
Can you still do the Jason voice from Battle of the Planets?
Well, my Jason voice was Ronnie Schell with an octave higher. In other words, I say, well, I think we're going to be in trouble if we don't do this now.
Well, you know what? We're going to be in trouble if we don't go to news, so I'm going to do that now. Ronnie Schell, thank you so much. What a pleasure it is to have you on WGN Radio.